ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो
The reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27, and Text 14. So this is the history, also not an itihasa history, more a story of King Puranjana. All other narrations in the Srimad Bhagavatam are historical facts or really take place, whereas this particular description here over several chapters is an allegorical narration. Narad Muni speaks to the king Prajini Barishad about his entanglement in fruitive life, absorption, and tries to get him out in an indirect way, talking to him through a beautiful, interesting, intriguing story, so that that particular king, Prajini Barishad, will come to understand something. So now we are in text 27, and the title is Attack by Dandavega on the city of Puranjana. And here we have, we say text 14, huh? Gandharvyastadrishirasya Maitunyascha sita sita Parivritya vilumbanti Sarvakama vinirmitam. And translation and purport as given by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Along with Chandavega were as many female Gandharvis as there were soldiers, and all of them repetitively blundered all the paraphernalia for sense enjoyment. So we hear a figurative description, allegorical descriptions with components or persons or elements. Certain names are there, and each name has a particular indication. So we will see this Chandavega we heard yesterday, Vachavega, Manasakroda Vega, huh? So an urge or a push, something which pushes away swiftly, so it's time. And here we have the Gandharvis and the Gandharvas. They are the days, 360 and 360. Now the purport says, the days have been compared to the soldiers of Chandavega. Night is generally a time for sex enjoyment, and days are considered to be white and nights are considered to be black. Or from another point of view, there are two kinds of nights, black nights and white nights. Night means darkness, eh? So white night, black night. All these days and nights combine to pass away our span of life and everything we manufacture for sense gratification. So things have been taken away by 360 plus 360, night and days. Material activity means manufacturing things for sense gratification. Scientists are conducting research to find out how we can satisfy our senses more and more elaborately. In this Kali Yuga, The demoniac mentality is employed in manufacturing various machines to facilitate the process of sense gratification. There are so many machines for ordinary household activities. There are machines for washing dishes, cleansing the floor, shaving, clipping hair. Today, everything is done by machine. All these facilities for sense gratification are described in this verse as sarva kama vinirmitam. The time factor, however, is so strong that not only is our span of life being expended, but all the machines and facilities for sense gratification are deteriorating. Therefore, in this verse, the word vilumbanti, blundering, is used. Everything is being blundered from the very beginning of our lives. This blundering of our possessions and lifespan begins with the day of our birth. One day will come, when death will finish everything and the living entity will have to enter another body to begin another chapter of life and again begin the cycle of material sense gratification. Prahlad Maharaj describes this process as puna punas jarvita jarvananam. Materialistic life means chewing the truth again and again. The central point of material life is sense gratification. In different types of bodies, the living entity enjoys various senses, and through creating various types of facilities, he chews the truth. Whether we squeeze sugar out of the sugar can with our teeth or a machine, the result is the same. Sugar can juice. We may discover many ways to squeeze the juice out of the sugar can, but the result is the same. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Asmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripada Maham Vande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. I read text 14 here again. Gandharvyas tadrishirasya maitunyascha sita sita parivritya vilumbanti sarva kama vinirmitam. Along with Chandavega were as many female Gandharvis as there were soldiers, and all of them repeatedly blundered all the paraphernalia for sense enjoyment. So here we have this description of Puranjana, the person who is the enjoyer or occupier of his body, spirit soul, but strongly feeling I'm this body, and he gets to hear or to learn that this bodily existence and all the facilities he has accumulated and is gathering around him are being taken away by soldiers, enemies. They attack him and he's there, and he will learn it actually. He will hear more how it's really taking place, and then finally he's pushed out of his body and takes another body. That's in the next chapter. And that body is a female body, because he was so much absorbed in enjoying, in kama, the desire to enjoy, and it led him to have a body of a female, which he then, fortunately, he's married in his next life. In this story, he's married to a devotee, Malaya Dwaj. And he's also, as a woman, then he engages in devotional activities, and somehow he comes to another final point. the next life, and there he comes to realize that he is a spirit soul. He realizes Paramatma within, a friend which has always been with him. And then that chapter ends by Narad Muni saying, speaking to Prajini Barishad, who listens all about, he says, actually this whole story is just a teaching for self-realization. My whole talking to you was to bring about some realization in you about the self, the transcendental self. However, at the stage he is now, is King Prajini Barishad, he is not able to understand much. Even after that, next chapter, whole thing, he still says, I have not really understood what you're talking about. Please explain it more again. So then chapter 29, Narad Muni again decodes everything he has said in a cryptic way, in a kind of a hidden or indirect way. He again goes over it, and then gradually King starts to see, this is my situation. I'm like that. Why is he so bewildered? He is a very fruitive person, a pious person, but very fruitive. And in his fruitive mentality, he performs yajñas, pious, religious. He is doing yajñas that gradually cover the whole planet. Prajini Barishad indicates that kusha grass that is spread. So from one yajña, he makes one yajña, then when it's finished, he moves on, but the kusha grass is still laying down. And then in the next yajña, they again put kusha grass, and again a yajña, and then another place. So it says that he did so many yajñas that the planet was covered with kusha grass. And in his mind, doing these yajñas was very important, was to gain something for him. Enjoying going to heaven or securing a good future birth. And in the process of doing this, he also killed animals. So Narad Muni, feeling compassion, tells him, there's no need to do this. Self-realization implies to realize the self, the eternal soul, has no need to perform such activities. Good deeds or even bad deeds, in a higher sense, they're just entangling. They lead to another birth. But it's hard, because the mind of Prajini Barishad, and likely some of us, is very much absorbed in calm. Kama esa, krodha esa, rajagun samudbhava. With a mode of passion and ignorance, as a link to it, or rising, or part of it is this desire, strong desire, sensual desires. So in text 5, in this chapter here, the word also is there, it says here, kama kasmala cetasa. Cetasa means the consciousness, and kama kasmala, polluted consciousness, with kama. And then Narad Muni, in text 11, he says to the king, my dear King Prajini Barishad, like you, King Puranjana also became implicated in so many desires. Nana kamo, unlimited, countless desires. Does he worship demigods, forefathers, and social leaders with various sacrifices like you? Yata bhavan, just like you do. So that's in earlier. And then he explains here now what happens by that, with such mentality, how one is attacked at some point by jara, old age, and mrityu, death. But he doesn't say directly death. He uses again this allegorical people that attack Puranjana. So the Gandharva's days, and the here we have the Chandavega king time. Everything is pushed forward. That leads to death. And death also then later is explained here. There is the Jvara, Vishnu Jvara or Prajvara, fever comes with it, death. And it's quite detailed described, the suffering that occurs while one undergoes death, especially with fever, fear, bhaya. There's another personality coming in, bhaya, which is fear persona or fear of death. And of course we may say, most or often people say, I don't mind, you know, I'm not afraid of death. But that's just because they feel safe. They think they are safe. People are very expert to imagine something about themselves, fooling themselves. So death is considered, this is a small thing, I don't care. But in reality, when death comes, people are scared from the unknown, scared from pain. People, most living entities don't want pain, always endeavor to free themselves from pain, so we dress warm, eat enough, because we know if we neglect this, we get into troubles. And pain is a very terrible thing, feelings of pain, toothaches, all kinds of aching. So they're not, just that alone is a fear. And death builds up more and more pressure of painful experiences. So naturally, certainly people are afraid of death. They may say not, but they actually are. But lying to themselves, that's a typical thing of the conditioned soul. So Srila Prabhupada here speaks then on this purport about how people are inventing, producing, manufacturing all kinds of things, machines and facilities to make themselves comfortable. Then for what? Calm. Basically to enjoy sensual pleasure. Puna punas charvita charvananam. Something which they have enjoyed before, they chew again and again, go over it again and again. It's hard to talk to people who are so much fooling themselves. Generally we think of Maya, or the normal way of Maya, is a potency, an illusory potency of the Lord that covers the knowledge of the living entity. But another angle to look at is that the living entity desires to be fooled. And Maya, energy, the material energy, facilitates. So the Bhagavatam also describes that Lord Brahma, part of his work as an engineer providing the bodies and everything, he creates nescience. And one nescience is self-deception. The ability that we can deceive ourselves or fooling ourselves. Maya is almost neutral. For the pure soul, Maya is not attractive. But for the person who has a polluted consciousness, Maya is an attractive thing, just like a magnet. Jai Sri Gaura Nitai, Jai Sri Krishna Balaram, Radhe Shyam. Just like a magnet can attract iron, but doesn't attract a feather or a piece of cloth. So when the heart is soft, pure, no problem. Even closeness to the world, manifested world, the world we perceive, doesn't affect him. But when there is already a desire inside, the desire, the calm, the deep sour of the desire of the soul, then it works. It covers and makes more desires, gross desires, sensual desires. So the first step, I want this illusion. We may not trace it back, but basically it's that what the Atma, the living entity, wishes. And Krishna knows. Krishna picks that up. Little thing. And then he gets entangled. And then he forgets. Self-deception works like that. You lie to someone, you know. I'm lying to him. Telling not, it's not the truth. No. He's not so wonderful, or just I'm making believe something. But lying to oneself is something that starts, and then we forget about it. We start to believe it ourselves. It's called self-deception. We lose awareness that we're just lying to ourselves. And the classical example, of course, is I'm happy. I'm all right. I'm a good person. Most prisoners, if you make an investigation and say, who of you in this prison is bad? Who is here in the prison and actually shouldn't be here because he's a good person? You're actually here in an incorrect or unfair way. Raise your hand. Basically, everybody thinks, I don't deserve that. I'm a good person. I did it, but if you would know why I did it, what led me to it, no? You would have done the same thing. That's ultimately, I'm a good person. No? So self-justification, always explaining to oneself, I'm good. No one can keep a low opinion about himself for long. I've done something wrong, and I see at the reaction of the people around me that they don't like it. So I would have to feel bad. But how long? Forever? No. After a while, I start to justify it in the mind. I think about the event in a new light, and I realize I'm okay. I have to be positive, no? Cannot be pessimistic or negative about myself. So I find ways, either the other people or the circumstances or this and that. Or even, I say, it never happened. It's not true. I didn't do it. And after a while, I believe, it never happened. I push it away. Just like an unpleasant news. And something is taken away. Say you lose a dear one. The drama, the experience is strong. So if it's going very deep, it may register at one level, but in the other level it doesn't. Say a family loses a child and they go to the funeral and everything has been taken, it's gone through, had the whole procedures. Weeks after, the time where this child used to come back at 4 o'clock from school, the parents look, is he coming? Is he not coming? It has not really registered that he's never coming back. It's called denial. Something is very clear, you know, funeral, everything. But in their minds, it's not pleasant. You can't deal with it. So they keep thinking he's still around. He's coming. It wasn't true. So similar to doing something wrong, it's not true. I haven't done it. So our turning away from Krishna, Anadya, Bully Krishna Sejiva, Anadya Bahirmukh, you turn away from Krishna. So it's hard for us to recognize that we have such a mentality and that it's a change, deep in change that has to take place. Especially if we are in the mode of passion and ignorance. There's hardly any awareness of this. There's hardly any belief that there is even a God. You know? And if there is a God, a supreme being, he's really here to satisfy me. Some belief is there, a little awareness, but it's not proper understanding. Pray to God to give us things or peace or all these things. No? But to realize that we are doing it, it needs mode of goodness, objectivity, very clear objective. What's going on with me? Because the other thing is, no, I'm holding, so you know the story of King Akbar, huh? Who was that king who went in the forest with his minister? You know? Anyway, there's the story, the person embraces the tree, strongly holding and says, "Let me go! Let me go!" So he is holding, but at the same time he's feeling or pretending, it holds me. But he's doing it. So I back up a little bit. The story is that the minister, the king asked the minister, you know, this lust, desire, when will it go? When will it go away? It must go away at some point. Because I don't want it. I don't want these lusty feelings, these attachments. So when I'm getting older, it will go away, right? And the minister said, no. He said, what? I don't take it, no. Then one story is, he goes to the dying man and he sees the daughter. Huh? But another similar story is that the minister teaches the king the same lesson by, on a hunting mission, embracing this tree. The minister jumps from the horse, runs to a tree, embraces and says, "Let me go! Let me go!" The king says, "What's going on here? Who's holding him now?" Then he realizes, hey, he's doing it himself, no? Oh, we are holding Maya. It's our doing it. He got that message. So people are expert in fooling themselves, denying themselves, or denying their culpability. Yeah, they're culprits. They're not innocent. People think, we would like to think we are innocent, it just happened. I'm not part of it. So in the spiritual process of sadhana, there is a stage where we come to understand how far we are actually guilty. And often when devotees speak about their past or what happened before and how there's kind of different levels of realizations. I think of three. So one person thinks of his past as something I had so many days and there was motorcycle riding I was successful, I gave it up, But he's kind of still taking pride how big of a karmi he was. Enjoyer, no? And the other person, in a little more purified stage, he starts, how ridiculous, no? I had this motorcycle, winter cold, but I took it into the elevator, 7th floor, put it there, polished it. I was so attached, no? So foolish, no? Piece of metal, no? But it was so attached. What a fool I was, no? A little more realization. And in a little more purified stage, we start to think, wow, I made a big blunder. Not only foolish, not only ridiculous, it's painful to realize that we live originally in a relationship with Krishna or in a much better place and we come into this world for selfish enjoyment. And Krishna is always there waiting. He never pushed us away. It's us doing it. Like we take something away from a good friend, huge amount of money, and go around and enjoy it. And after some point we see, wow, I was not right now. Then we come back and talk to him and say, but the feeling is, how is he going to take it? How is Krishna going to take it? I come back, I spend all the money. Is he gonna, how is he gonna do? I need some courage to face it and say, I'm really sorry. I've done a big blunder. Turned away and took so many things and just forgot. Now I'm back here. Can you accept me again? Krishna's gonna say, wait a moment. You're honest? You really want it? Are you gonna take again? Let's see. So Krishna is not responding immediately. Oh, I'm here again. Okay. He wants to make sure that we actually are reliable people. Right? Not that he doesn't want us, but he wants to make sure that it's not happening again. So purification as such requires some effort or requires some, you have to show it, that we really want it. Not I'm a devotee now, alright. How long? Today it's too cold. Not today. Today we have some other important things, no? Day by day, again and again and again. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I've been reading a bit in the Jiva Dharma, a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and I found a very interesting point there, which just made so much sense to me. There it says that the question is, if I go to turn to Krishna, chanting his names once, I have done the right thing, right? It says, actually, you have done the right thing. Now the connection, the samband is there. Krishna, relationship. It only needs one time calling, purely. Krishna! All the past, everything is cut, liberated. Once, the holy name, with sincerity, like that, no? Then the question is, why do people, even highly advanced, purified souls, why do they chant constantly, if once is enough? Right? Nirjan, bhajan, place where there is no people, no, just constantly, bhajan, chanting, chanting, if once is enough. So, what's the answer? It's not enough, once chanting, Krishna? No, it is enough. So why chanting all the time? To prove something? Could be an explanation, proof. I'm really holding on to this now. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that it's through the teacher, Raghunath Das Goswami, a person in the Jiva Dharma. He says that because the world we experience is a world of time, where a time factor is there. And if our senses are not engaged in spiritual activities, but they are there, they want engagement, and then the senses and the mind, they will switch into material thinking, material world, right? Because thinking will always go on. So by constant chanting, no problem. By stopping to chant, what happens? You can just do nothing? No. It will, the surrounding is, we will have to do something, so we will do materialistic activity. Therefore, chant again and again and again. Keep on that level. Keep engaged. That's the understanding. Is that clear? Kind of. No. It's not that it's not enough chanting. Once, it's enough. But then next, stop, and what? An idle mind is a devil's workshop, as they say, you know. If the mind is not engaged in spiritual activity, it will be engaged in the other way. In the darkness. Right? We fall back into the same trap. Although once turning to Krishna sincerely and with that feeling of resentment and contrition, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, with a real genuine feeling, what have I done? What a fool. trying to enjoy this world. What a big mistake, no? It's not only ridiculous, certainly nothing to be proud of, it's a big blunder. During the Kartik time, when we hear of Damodar being the Damodar prayer, there is Satyavrata. The person who originally, as we have it now, reminds us of this lila, Damodar lila, it's a Nitya lila, it's always there, but different times, different personalities are aware of it and present it. So, in his way of thinking, since what is there, kim anye, what's more beautiful there than to be aware of Krishna's interaction with his devotees, like Mother Yashoda being bound by ropes of love, and there is this reciprocation of Krishna reciprocating with that love. Liberation or anything is never, not the slightest, can be compared. Sadame manasi avirashtam. My only ambition or desire is to just be conscious of this reality. Nothing else. What else could be better? There's nothing more beautiful. Not that he thinks, I want to be Mother Yashoda, or I want to be, even not even thinks I want to be there as such. But just being aware of that reality, such a wonderful thing. Right? But as a natural situation would be that we actually are interacting in some ways with Krishna's lila, five basic rasas, main relationships and subsidiary rasas, somewhere along the whole many, many pastimes, waves and waves of pastimes. We have the Navadvip, lila, the pastime simultaneous is the lila, Krishna's Madhurya lila, Sakya, Bhav, going on. Both, all three at the same time, right? Otherwise, why would they be here at the same time? They're all at the same time, in the same space, within Krishna Balaram Mandir. But in the same space, in the spiritual reality, all these pastimes, different levels, they don't interfere. One is not disturbing the other, but they're on the same spot, the same time. On, that's just part of it, a little bit of it. There's so many more things, all go on there. And the main thing is ras, exchange of affection, rati bhav, mahabhav. What more beautiful, right? So to be aware of this, very nice. And then what about this world which we have here with this chewing of the jute? Punas punas charvita charvananam. Vomit it. Get it out now. It's nothing really satisfactory, or nothing that would have attraction unless we imagine. We have to really imagine it's attractive. You ask any surgeon or any medical person who deals with bodies, is it beautiful? Are bodies beautiful? Once a devotee told me his name is Krishna Prasad, he's a doctor, young doctor. He told me that he came home during the day and his father was surprised why he came home. You should supposed to be at work. And he came home to take a shower. He said, what happened? He said, I was helping this Madhuchi deliver the baby. And when he came out, splashed all over the body, you know. He had to come home and take a shower. So ask such a person, who is it? What is it? What's the attractiveness with material bodies? Blood, pus, scream, all kinds of terrible things, no? So when one has an attraction to it, it's only possible There is an imagination involved. A self-deception. I have to make myself believe it is nice, it smells good, it looks good. Everything like that. It's not. From an objective, sober, what's nice about it? Nothing. But because we're fooling ourselves so nicely and stimulating and all these utipans, whatever is there coming with it, people really believe it. They swear for it now, that nothing better. Because they know nothing better, right? They know nothing better. Therefore, it ends up to be the most important and most pleasurable thing. Although it's never satisfying, has to go further extremes and never satisfying. So Satyavrata says very clearly, Kimanye, what's there better? Nothing better. Cannot be. And his authority. We may not have to that extent the access to such pastimes, but we can hear about it. And we can hear about Krishna's dealings, sweet dealings with devotees. And in our mind, think this is nice. I like it. So from that little shraddha, mental shraddha, we start to think, what to do about it? Is it a way to get closer, to actually get in touch with this? And scriptures, guru, sadhu, shastra, they say yes. How? Nyam. Yam, nyam. Vaidhi. Through rules and regulations. By rules and regulations, the consciousness, this calm, chetana, starts to sober, and become more and more clear. And gradually, we start to perceive the self itself has that longing. Then real shraddha develops. Before the shraddha is called abhas, shraddha abhas, or is mental. Some mental ideas. I like it. It's nice, beautiful. Krishna, Krishna. But it's all in the mental. Mental God. Mental concept of who we are. As we see the sun bringing light into a dark place, and the person with the sun starts to see himself. Oh, that's okay. Like that, huh? Me. Similarly, Atma or Bhagavan realization or a real realization, Swarup or understanding oneself and realizing Krishna as he is something happens simultaneous. It's an awakening. So seeing myself as I am is kind of implies that I also know what Krishna is. And as long as I'm in my own world, in the consciousness, ahankar, or some having a purush abhiman, or purush bhav, I'm an enjoyer, it means I have not understood. It's not true. I'm not an enjoyer. I think. I make myself believe. I fool myself into it. But it's not. I'm the Atman. The Atman is a servant. He's giving love and affection. He's offering. He's not taking. Giving. He's not a receiver. And even that what he gives is Krishna's. He has very little potency really. He can only get from Krishna and return it to Krishna, this prem. But that's his position, that makes him satisfied, and if he tries to manipulate the material energy, he gets just covered over with Krishna's energies, make him feel in a way that he's not true. So the tiny, tiny tatashta, tiny, tiny option, go this way, go a long way, go this way, go a long way. Switch over. It's a tipping point, huh? I think I used that once before. Tipping point. You have a glass and you put it on an angle, at some point, tick, it falls over. You don't have to do anything anymore. Right? Tipping point. So people speak about this tipping point in a materialistic way that they feel now we have gone so far with exploiting the resources and destroying the environment, Now it goes down the drain. It becomes unstoppable, irreversible. All kinds of things gonna happen. Yes, it's true. But the real tipping point is something else. The tiny Atma misusing his liberty or his choice, going into a world or a way of feeling and thinking, which is not true. And he pushes it, then he falls into it more and more. And he goes down, 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 and produces paraphernalia, manufactures all kinds of things, and machines, and cell phones, and gets entangled, and big cloud, big illusion. Go to the other tipping point, starts with a little faith. Shraddha, huh? And then Sadhu Sangha, Vachana Kriya, Nath, Nivritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Shakti, Bhav, Prem. The other way. Back. And now, reversible. Like they say, it's not reversible. But the jiva's position is reversible from any point, basically. It's a mysterious thing, even if a person is very, very much down, like him, but like this Rajini Barishad, if he gets association and is willing to give a hearing, Rajini Barishad is not doing much more, just hearing, right? Asking question, considering it, and then he says, wow, now I got it. Right? So at the end he says, whoa, you're talking about me, now I see it's true, huh? It's not the others. I'm guilty. It's not somebody else, and I'm a good performer of so many yagyas and such a good person. Huh? How can I be bad? I've done so much good. He starts to see, actually, I'm the fool. I'm the one. So just by having, therefore it's always the shravanam. Shravanam is the most essential. Hearing, then mananam, thinking about it. If you just hear the same thing, but we never really think about it. So many lectures and so many books we read, but it doesn't go very deep. We don't just think it's better to read this than the newspaper. Huh? But actually, as Prabhupada says, scrutinizingly study, not to find out false or scrutinize. In that sense, no? But actually saying, what does it actually mean? What does it actually imply? Where does it lead to? If I accept all this, and say, wow, I made a big mistake. It leads to that realization. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. It leads to attentive chanting. Right? Would it? If you actually understand what's going on and what's been said, it would lead to attentive chanting. Why not? Kimanye, anything more important? If I chant and think of something else, that means I consider what I think, contemplate so important. But it's not possible, it's more important than Krishna. More significant. Krishna, Krishna. And they think, oh, this, oh, that. So I'm fooling myself. I make myself believe something. But if I hear, think carefully, deeply, consider, then I see, actually, no need to think about anything except hearing. And from the hearing, attentive hearing, Srila Prabhupada says, the Naam, then Rupa, Lila, Guna, Rupa, Lila. Huh? So there's a sequence. More and more we realize what's in the name. That name, Krishna Naam, is the whole thing. Nine devotional services or Nava Anga Bhakti, it's already in the name. I chant, what else? What about all the other ones? Eight, seven, this and that. If one chants attentively, the other nines are there. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. How one would have to see a little deeper, how is it possible that by chanting all the others are taken care of, exactly how that works, but that's what he says. So I end here. Say if somebody has a comment or a question, we have a few minutes, some time left. Except a comment. Adipurush Prabhu raises his hand, so no question, please. Will be. Thank you for attending this class. It's always for the speaker, at least as far as I can tell for myself, it's purifying to speak. And I, for my way I do things, whenever they ask me to give class, I do it. Not that I necessarily think I have much to say, but I know it's purifying, because it makes you think. And Srila Prabhupada says in places, no, that it's hearing than explaining is more important than hearing, because before you can speak, you have to have something that you know, that you can explain. So thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dhanprabhu, for the analytical presentation. I liked how you connected this self-deception created by Brahma with our condition. It's described in the third canto, Tama, the first, or Avidya in another Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's quote from Yoga Sutra, Avidya or Tama, self-deception. So, my question is, how it manifests as denial of things that may be obvious to others, and or criticism and so forth. But how do we recognize in ourselves our self-deception? Do you have some ideas about how to avoid self-deception?
Okay, Adipurush, your question, if I may repeat or encapsulate it, is it that how can I measure or grade myself, assess myself, or how far I'm involved in self-deception, how much I'm not?
This is also an interesting point, how deeply I am deceiving myself, and also some specific manifestations, what are my denials?
I would think the
specific anarthas that are very manifest in my heart, but I don't want to admit to myself. I'd rather see them in others than in myself. How do I recognize?
I'd like just to show one example, that one which I already said, but just elaborate a little bit on that. By chanting, I think of something else. On the other hand, if I chant and I hear myself, that's, to my understanding, that's the way of measuring or assessing myself, how well I'm doing. And as far as in which areas I am, what other symptoms or signs are there, I can say about non-devotees, in the sense they don't think of death. Like in Mahabharata, they say the most amazing thing in this world is that everybody sees others die, but they behave as they wouldn't die. It's very amazing, no? So that's a facet or a sign of denial, people living in denial. I was generally, the acknowledging of anarthas, just things, behaviors and things we have that we don't like to acknowledge them. For instance, of course we have the six basic enemies, but then envy. I would think envy, to me personally, I think envy is something very hard to perceive. That many of our actions, responses to situations, is underlying is a sense of insecurity, which we say then it's envy, no? But we feel disturbed when others look good or perform well, and makes us feel less well by that, no? In other words, we judge or assess ourselves to the performance of others, but that's an illusion. Our performance has nothing to do with other people's performance. We have to see for where we are at in relation to Krishna. If I assess myself against myself even, I can say, well, you know, beginning I could so many slokas, now it's I'm forgetting. Or at some point I was good, I could dance for hours, now I can't, now I'm not a good devotee, something like that, no? Everybody towards old age, it goes down, no? And we're gonna be a loser. If I assess myself to others, I'm always a loser because there's always somebody better. I always have, so I have to clearly understand my value. Self-value or self-esteem doesn't come from any of any skills or performances. So what is it? What makes me of value? It's my shraddha, probably, my attraction to Krishna. And that even, you know, then how can I see that I have or don't have? Do I have real shraddha or not shraddha? Then again, I would bring it back to the same thing. How do I chant? If I'm chanting and I think of other things, it means I'm not really having much shraddha or much understanding. I'm performing it, but I'm not into it. And if I can do it, I can say I'm doing well. And then also, if you wind it, you know, you wind forward, backward, forward, then time of death, what else can we do at the final stage? You can't do any more artis, can't do any more anything, no? You can just have shraddha and maybe utter the holy name. With great faith. Hare Krishna. And realization. Like the last breath is basically like that. So, I would think it always boils down to that 16 good rounds. As Srila Prabhupada writes, no. Unless there's 16 good rounds, there's no question of spiritual life and you have to fall down, Prabhupada says in a letter. And then 16, when we can say, well, if you can do 16 good rounds, why not 17? Why not 18? Now, why ending there? Well, because there's service, alright. But if there's not the calling, many of us are visiting Vrindavan, may do some service here and there, then why only 16 rounds? Do another 16. Hey, and then another 16, no? And then from 7 o'clock or 7:30 until 9 o'clock, another. Alright, we did 64. And the next day again, after a night of ignorance, forgetfulness, we need just 16 rounds to come back to normal. Now we've done 16 rounds, now we're back where we were before. Now, chant again. Night is a terrible thing, because when we sleep, we're just completely overpowered, out of control now. Just go... If we're lucky, we sleep very deep and we don't go through the mental level, no? of dreams or thoughts. Deep in, out, finish. Otherwise, we're exposed to all these movies, no? And if we are not careful, during the day, we pick up all kinds of thoughts and we make all kinds of thinking. Then when we chant, our chanting is as His Holiness Radhanath Swami says it's going to be the offering of burnt chapatis. You chant, but because of all these thoughts the day before, we say offenses or whatever, no, nonsense. Huh? And then as we start chanting, all these things come back in. And so my chanting is offering burnt chapatis. Nothing very nice. So first 16 to... prepare the cooking well and cook well, and then another 16 to do the real offering, and another 16. But anyway, that basically that comes down to chanting, huh? Of interesting. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.